Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Let's talk about dark money in Massachusetts politics. It's still pretty dark in places, but there's the occasional ray of light. Take the news from earlier this week that the state's Office of Campaign Finance levied its largest ever penalty, more than $425,000, on a dark money organization that was a massive player in last year's battle over ballot question two. That was the proposal to raise the charter school cap in the state. Now, you'll recall that question two was the most expensive ballot question in state history, more than $40 million spent by both sides. And $19 million of that came from Families for Excellent Schools Advocacy, a group connected to the New York-based pro-charter Families for Excellent Schools. Well, it turns out that Families for Excellent Schools Advocacy, or FESA, was required to disclose its donors. It did not. The state's campaign finance watchdog has forced that disclosure, and we now know that about $15 million of those funds came from approximately 40 individuals, including Amos Hostetter, the former cable television businessman from Boston, Seth Klarman, chief executive of the Baupost Group, and other hedge fund executives, and Paul Sagan, chair of the state's Board of Elementary and Secondary Education. Well, joining us now is Michael Sullivan. He is the director of the Massachusetts Office of Campaign and Political Finance. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So first of all, this is a historic fine, I guess, and a violation. $426,000, the largest in state history.
Let me clarify what a fine is, because everybody wants to call it a fine or a penalty. We don't have the ability to fine. It was a negotiated agreement. What that number represents is all of the money that was on hand in the FESA account as of whatever date, it was July 31st of this year.
Yeah.
Essentially shut down the bank account, dissolve the C4, and be done with it.
Wow. The Commonwealth of Massachusetts gets that money.
No, it certainly doesn't go to my budget.
Where does it go?
Goes to the Commonwealth's general fund.
General fund.
Yeah, we've in these agreements that we've done for disclosure issues the last few years, we've raised $1.2 million.
Huh. Yeah. How unusual is it for something like this to happen in the course of an election or a ballot question?
In a ballot question, I think it's very unusual. In the time that I've been there, this is only the second time we've dealt with a ballot question in dark money. The first time was actually with the casino question that they tried to bring more casinos to Suffolk Downs after the first round. And we ended up doing a disposition agreement with some folks they said they were from Delaware, but they really weren't.
And you've been doing this for 23, 24 years?
23 years.
So in all that time, the ballot questions, the contributions for ballot questions have been named.
As far as we know, you know, the thing about ballot questions is that anybody can give and there are no limits. So it's all about disclosure. So for the most part, over the years, our auditing process has been, yeah, this looks pretty good. There's a lot of names. There's a lot of individuals, there's a lot of companies. It doesn't look like it's coming from any one source.
Okay. But so just so we're clear on the law in Massachusetts, like you said, for ballot questions, anybody can give and there are no limits. So individuals can give publicly, you know, $5 million if they wanted to.
Absolutely.
But in this case, that is not what happened.
That is not what happened.
So describe to us what exactly did Families for Excellent Schools Advocacy do wrong that was in violation of Massachusetts campaign finance laws?
Well, I think you have to go back and sort of look at the history of what they were doing before the question came up. And FESA, which is what we call them, early on was being funded by FES. And the vast majority of the money coming into that account was from the 501c3 and from a couple of donors. And that was it. We looked from August 2015 through the end of 16. And what happened is in July, when the question was certified for the ballot, the flow of money began, and it was from individuals primarily. Only two individuals had given from August of 15 through June of 16.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, individuals started giving pretty quickly and in pretty heavy amounts.
And the investigation found that as individuals gave money to FESA, that it was within a very short period of time that almost identical dollar values were then going to the ballot question committee?
Large dollar values. Not always identical,
okay.
But they were close enough for us to draw that conclusion.
Yeah. So ultimately, your office determined that they should have been behaving like a question committee. So what exactly does that mean, though?
Well, what we determined is they should have been acting like a ballot question committee. And whether or not they explicitly said to people, come support this ballot question committee, that was their intent. That was what they were doing. And the timing of when they were doing it and the amounts in which they were doing it with were so enormous that you could draw no other conclusion than that they were a ballot question committee.
Okay.
And that those donors should be, you know, disclosed publicly to everybody. There was a lot of press last year about this, and we watched it pretty closely. We actually opened a case right after the election. This has taken 10 months.
Okay. How does an investigation like this work? What gets it started off? I mean, you said you were watching question two pretty closely. But.
Well, there were a lot of media stories, but honestly, with investigations, when you look at reports and things, there's a three-word phrase I use, trust your gut. Yeah. I've been doing this a while. I can look at a report. So can most of my staff. They've all been there a while. We can look at a report and sort of get a feel for it. So you trust your gut. We have subpoena power, so we've learned to use that judiciously. We do all of our investigations under grand jury secrecy, so we don't discuss it.
And you need that standard because you're dealing with finances and probably banks and financial stuff. And
I have a newspaper article on a bulletin board over my desk that says, oops, doesn't cut it when man's reputation is ruined. So you want to make sure that if you're going to do these investigations that you get it right. And that's the key.
So there was some indication that even during the election that made you want to watch closely what was happening?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were watching, but we needed to wait for the election to be over. Under our statute, our big power is to refer something to the Attorney General, but we can't refer to the Attorney General within 120 days of the election.
I got it.
So it's like a blackout period.
So how does this differ, though, from all the money that went into the No on Two side? Because lots of that money, the majority of it, came from teachers' unions.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, how does that differ from what Families for Excellent Schools Advocacy was doing?
The teachers' union was using money from their dues, from the dues that they collect from their members. So that money was raised for a general purpose, and they have a bank account with money in it for a general purpose. I'm assuming that's what they used to fund it. So they didn't raise the money for the ballot question. Mm-hmm. They were general funds that they had.
And you were also talking about how regarding Families for Excellent Schools Advocacy, that the timing was really important.
The timing was key.
Okay.
That was the whole key to this.
So this disposition agreement calls for a couple of interesting things. Like one is that FESA has now been entirely dissolved. It doesn't exist mm-hmm. anymore.
Correct.
Why was that necessary?
It's part of the negotiation.
Okay, but they were willing to do it.
They were willing to do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, when we get down to negotiating, what you should realize is that we're trying to come to an agreement. If we don't come to an agreement, we still have the opportunity to send this to the Attorney General. So there's a big incentive, I think, for most folks who are dealing with us to try to do an agreement.
Okay. So the umbrella organization, though, Families for Excellent Schools, still exists.
Apparently, yeah.
But you've also, in part of the agreement, is that they won't be involved in Massachusetts elections for the next 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How unusual is that to be part of a disposition agreement?
It's something we've talked to with people. We've done a number of disclosure cases, mostly in candidate cases. And oftentimes we put that on the table for folks to say, listen, why don't you just take a little break for a while? You know, you've had a problem. You're going to take a little break and then you can come back after a while if you want to. And that's kind of what we put out here on the table. And they accepted that.
Fascinating. Okay, so here's what I guess people really want to know. This ballot question was so contentious mm-hmm. in Massachusetts. In a way, maybe it's not surprising that there was a lot of dark money involved. But I suppose for the sake of our democracy, is there a way for us to get to a place where this can be stopped before an election actually happens?
Well, I think you probably have to ask the Supreme Court that. You know, we've had Citizens United. What the Supreme Court did say in Citizens United was that disclosure was good, but we're not seeing that in practice. And so that's right now, that's kind of where our efforts are you know, geared towards, is just making sure that people disclose what they do. And part of the importance of this discussion and this agreement is to get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure people understand, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so are there regulations in Massachusetts that could be strengthened?
Well, I think we did a pretty good job in this case. Our regulations are great. Our general counsel, Greg Byrne, does an awesome job with our regulations, and when we have wide latitude in doing our regulations. In this case, we stole a regulation from California that had a similar case like this about 3 or 4 years ago. And our regulation basically talked about the timing and the amount and how you can draw no other conclusion than this was these donations were made for the ballot question.
Yeah. Mike Sullivan, if we could, let's just take a little step back because you have been doing this for 24 years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you sound incredulous at that.
Not that I'm incredulous. It's just that like you have a really unique perspective on how money and politics has changed over that time.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So first of all, yeah. what got you into this?
You know, I grew up in Lynn, and I worked for a state rep as an intern when I was in college. And I went to my first fundraiser, and I thought, wow, this is kind of interesting. Look who's showing up. Look who's giving money. I wonder how this all works. And I've just always been interested in it ever since then. You know, I had planned to do my thesis on this issue. I've always kept an eye on it. And when the opportunity came to you know, apply for this job, I was on it.
Wow. And so, but it's a job that you have to be appointed by the governor?
No, it's really unique. You're appointed by a four-person panel, and it's called the Commission to Select the Director. It is the dean of a law school who's appointed to the commission by the governor. It's the Secretary of State. It's the chairman of the Republican Party and the chairman of the Democratic Party, and it has to be a unanimous appointment, and it's for 6 years.
I see. So it's a bipartisan selection
mm-hmm.
then. And
mm-hmm.
you've been in this position with Republican Democratic governors as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so how have things changed with money and politics in that time? Because I feel like, again, just at the risk of repeating myself, with question two, we reached a new level in Massachusetts in terms of the amount of money coming in for not even a political office.
Yeah, certainly the money has increased tremendously, and the way the money gets to the election has increased. What we're proud of on our side, blow our own horn a little bit, is the ability that we have to get that information out quickly. Everyone files electronically. When I started, it was all paper. If you wanted to see a report, you came into our office, you asked for a file, you sat down, you took notes, you made a photocopy. Now the data is all out there instantaneously. It's searchable, sortable, you name it. You can export it. You can do whatever you want with it. And I think that's allowed people to see what's going on to the extent that the disclosure is good. When the disclosure is not good, that's when we come into the game and try to make sure that it's a little better.
Do you think this kind of watchdog is more necessary now than ever?
Oh, yeah. The amounts of money are just enormous. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, these agencies were created in the mid-70s after Watergate. And, you know, money's like water. It's going to go somewhere. And our job is to make sure that everybody knows how it got to where it's going.
Yeah. Do you worry about how much money has an influence in politics?
You know, I'm the referee. So it's sort of hard to worry about that. It sort of goes to my avocation. I'm a football official. And in college football, you know, pass interference can be no more than 15 yards. And in the pros, it can be the spot foul, it can be 50 yards. If you ask me to ref the college game, I'm going to do it with 15. If you ask me to ref the pro game, I'm going to do it with 60. It doesn't really matter what I think. It matters what the statute says.
Okay. Very diplomatic and wise answer.
I've practiced that one.
But just to reiterate, so in case people didn't know, four ballot questions in Massachusetts. You can mm-hmm. give unlimited amounts, but you got to put your name on it.
Correct.
All right. Well, Michael Sullivan is the director of the Office of Campaign and Political Finance. A real pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And I should note, we did reach out for an interview or with an interview request for Families for Excellent Schools. They sent us this statement that said, quote, "Though we believe we complied with all laws and regulations during the campaign, we worked closely with the OCPF to resolve this matter so we could move forward with our mission of working alongside families desperate for better schools," end quote. Now, we here at Radio Boston covered the question of dark money and the 2016 election rather extensively last year, and we have gone through our website and dug up all the links to those conversations because I know you're dying to hear them again. So we put them all at our website. Check them out at radioboston.org. And guess what, everyone? We get to do it all again next year. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.